If they ask me, I could write a book about the way you walk, whisper, and look.
And this indeed is Writer's Block on Talk the Talk with Megan Zinn, who has with her and us today a very special guest. Megan, the microphone is yours.
It's mine. Today we have a little bit of a different conversation. We've talked to a lot of authors about their new books lately, but we're going to talk to somebody who is deeper into the process of publishing, a little further back in the process. So my guest is Pat Dobie, and Pat has been a developmental editor of fiction and nonfiction since 2010. Her company is called Lucid Edit, and she is the author of novels as well, The Tenants and Pawn to Queen, and the nonfiction book Fiction Editing, A Writer's Roadmap. And Pat teaches writing and co-hosts the podcast Gifted Underachievers, the podcast for mid-level creatives with delusional ambitions. Brilliant title. And I took a class from Pat a while back, which was actually on marketing as a freelance editor. So to jump in, we're going to talk to Pat about developmental editing and related activities. So welcome, Pat.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That was a lovely intro, and I'm thrilled to be here.
Good.
Yeah.
So just to start, what is a developmental editor?
And what is developmental editing?
Well, yes.
There you go. Okay. Well, it happens with any book, or it can happen with any book. Definitely a book that the writer is having trouble with, or that the publisher thinks needs structural or deep work, not just a polish and a correction of typos and punctuation and that kind of thing, but really a deep look at, if it's fiction, the story arc, characterization, how events unfold, scene mechanics or scene dynamics, how people talk to each other in scenes, whether there's enough going on, how many characters there are, whether they're in the right place at the right time, doing the right thing. So it's kind of, it's very analytical. Mm-hmm. And it takes a really deep, deep interest in books and in how they're put together. And in nonfiction, similar stuff, but of course there's no characters usually unless it's memoir. So it's more, what's the content and how is the content related to the reader's needs and how does it unfold?
And where does developmental editing fit into the process? I think people know that there's editors, but not the reality that there are many different kinds of editors. So where does this fit into the process for the publication of a book?
It can be quite early in the process, and it can also happen after the book's been written. If there's a first draft, or even, I've worked on books that have sometimes been through 10 drafts already. Wow. And done a developmental edit because they were flawed all the way along. And so they, you know, there's no point in publishing a flawed book if you can see how to fix it.
Yeah.
But normally a writer will work with a developmental editor either if they're having trouble with the book and it's not doing what they want it to do, or if their book is getting turned down by acquisitions editors at publishing houses over and over again, and they are getting conflicting feedback, or no feedback at all, they might ask an editor to work with them to understand, so they can understand why their book isn't getting picked up.
All right, yeah. And you also do manuscript evaluations and author coaching and consulting, is that right?
Yeah, I do manuscript evaluations. I consider them sort of a type of developmental edit in a way.
Yeah, that's what I've always thought of it. Tell me a little bit about what that entails.
It's like the Toyota versus the Cadillac, if you want to look at it. on how's your ride? You know, the developmental edit goes really deep. And I do things like, it's called a book map, where I actually reverse engineer what they've already got in order to understand where they're heading for in terms of what they want for their book and what their vision is. And the manuscript evaluation, I read the book a couple of times and I have thoughts because reading is my job. You know, I'm a professional reader. So, it's a little less detailed in terms of the feedback I give on what works and what I think needs work. And it almost never goes deep into how you might fix the issues. So it's a bit lighter, but it's basically the same purview. It's the whole book.
Yeah, I love the description of professional reader, which is what a lot of us wanted to do for a living and have found ways to do it. I'm speaking with professional reader and developmental editor Pat Dobie. Pat, for somebody who is writing their first book and hoping to get a literary agent or planning to publish independently, when would they come to a developmental editor?
It depends on the person. I think, knowing what I know now, when I started writing, I didn't know there were editors. I had no idea it was a job because I've been writing since I was in my 20s. So I think people would come to an editor, and a lot of it is budget related. So if you're a student and you're writing your first book, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, you won't have the money probably to pay a professional editor. But if you do have the kind of funds that it takes, you can go to an editor at any point in the process. Most of the time, it's when you get stuck.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what is your process in editing a manuscript? What do you do starting with, you receive it, and then how do you jump into that, what seems like a kind of an overwhelming process?
Oh God, I'm such a geek about the process. It's kind of nuts. So I call it five stages. I teach developmental editing as well for fiction, and we walk through the process on in, during a 6-week course. And the first task is to understand the book as it is. And so that I take it apart, I read it once first, then I do a book map, which is an Excel spreadsheet breaking down all the components of the book, and that helps you see the big picture. You can see it like a it's like a map instead of traveling through the countryside on a train. You get a much wider perspective on how it's put together. And then I go back and read it again, usually. And in that at that point, I have understood the novel or the book if it's nonfiction. And then I can diagnose issues. Where did I get bored? Where did I feel like it was too repetitive, too much information, not enough information? Where did I lose the plot if it's a story? And how did I feel when I was reading it? For me, reading is a form of listening. It's where did you stop wanting to listen to the book? And other issues, some of them I can see really clearly, some of them are quite subtle, and it takes a lot of delving to figure them out. And then once I've gotten an idea of what is the book, what are the issues that I'm seeing? I go back and consider the context. So, who's the book for? What are the writers? What's the writer's situation? Is it their first novel or their 10th novel or their third self-help book, their ninth memoir? So there's a lot of context. How well is this book selling in the market? Has this trope been done a million times? So, World War II books, novels. They have to be pretty fresh because there's so many of them right now that if they don't have a bit of a fresh take on World War II, they're not going to get picked up. And then identify possible solutions. That just comes from my own experience as a writer and as a writing teacher. There's a million ways to write a book. I can give ideas, but the writer's got to decide what they want to do. And then I tell the writer, and that is a huge part of it because it's a bit of a, it can be a tough situation when you're explaining to somebody, what their book needs, and in your opinion, it's always quite subjective. So I have a quite a rigid, in a way, a rigid process for telling the writer. I write a long letter. I meet with them on Zoom usually, and then we have some back and forth.
Yeah, you got to be quite a diplomat. Bill, you had a question.
Yeah, I have a question for both of you, Megan Zinn and Pat Dobie. Pat's used this phrase, the book not being picked up, meaning that no publishing house has said, yes, we will take this book. My understanding is that for most publishing houses at this juncture, they require that a person have an agent. So I'm wondering if that's part of the process and whether that understanding is correct or not.
Yeah, and I'll let Pat kind of answer that, but a little bit, but I'll just say a little bit that my understanding is, yeah, and I mean, getting picked up, it may well be being picked up by a literary agent, but yeah, I do think it is true that in many cases you really do need to get the literary agent excited about it first. But Pat, why don't you elaborate on that?
Yeah, well, the short answer is yes. Most publishers, excuse me, there's the Big Five, which are multinational corporations, and they have hundreds of imprints, and those publishers will not take unagented manuscripts usually. And then there are places like university presses, mid-sized publishers, a lot of them have gone, they've been bought up by the Big Five. And some of them will take unagented manuscripts, but most writers who are looking for longevity or who want to be published by one of the Big Five, for example, Penguin Random House, they will try to get an agent first. The process for getting an agent is very inefficient and time consuming. So that's where people can get stuck for years sometimes. But yeah, that's how it normally works.
Yeah, in fact, the
Yeah.
writer we talked to 2 weeks ago, Grace, it's her first book, and her literary agent found her, just read one of her short
Wow.
stories and came to her, which I don't think happens very often. And is, of course, the dream, I think,
I
for
would
most
imagine,
writers.
yeah.
So this is a question I've always had, which I've occasionally I've thought about, do I want to do developmental editing, which I find really fascinating, and I've never done. But like, I imagine that the hardest part is, how do you, if somebody brings you a manuscript that you think is unpublishable, I mean, I'm sure there's some that need a lot of fixes and you can tell them how to do it. Do you ever see ones that are just like, no, you need to start over from scratch? And how do you tell somebody that about their baby?
Well, I mean, you tell them kindly. Editors, it's our job to tell the truth. You cannot go, oh, sure, it'll be fine if we just get a copy edit over there. You have to tell the truth, especially if you do that level of editing. It's your reputation depends on you being able to be honest with people. And so I just couch it as it's going to need a tremendous amount of work. Is this the novel you want to do all that work on, or do you want to start with a different one? Most novelists don't just have one book.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
So I'm speaking with developmental editor Pat Adobe. Pat Adobe, no, that's not what your name is, Pat Adobe. What tends to be the most common problems that you see in a manuscript, or are there common problems, or is it all over the
Yeah,
map?
I guess probably the biggest problem I see in a fiction manuscript is meaning, emotion. What does it mean to the reader? How do you get them to care about the characters? And in nonfiction, it's often, do you know who you're talking to? It's a little sometimes too broad. So it's a matter of honing it down until it's a really, really useful book for lots of people, rather than a semi-useful book for lots more people.
Bill.
I'm wondering whether you have any, what's the word I want? Rules is not quite it, but some rules of the road that you use in terms of your editing and your reviewing a manuscript for your conclusion as for whether or not it's publishable, which is to say, whether a publisher will take it. And in particular, I'm interested whether you tell or authors that, well, too many descriptions, too many adjectives, not enough action, not enough dialogue, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I tell them usually within the manuscript itself. So when you get a manuscript, it's usually in Microsoft Word, which is kind of the publishing standard, and it allows you to make marginal comments. So that level of feedback I give within the manuscript. And then when I zoom out and actually deliver everything back to the writer after I've worked on it for a month or so, I write them a really long letter. And then we talk about it in the Zoom call after to unpack what I'm saying. But I think within the manuscript, I sometimes leave hundreds of comments. 700, 800 comments is not unusual for a long book. And that's the point at which I either get in there and do line edits, which show up as redlining in the manuscript, or I'll leave a comment and say, the scene dynamics here need some work.
This is Writer's Block with Megan Zinn, who has with her and us today a very special guest, Pat Dobie. We'll be back with more for how your manuscript can become publishable right after this.
You're listening to Talk the Talk with Bill Newman and Buzz Eisenberg. You're listening to Talk the Talk with Bill Newman and Buzz Eisenberg, WHMP.
Buzz, we should note, is away today. This is Writer's Block on Talk the Talk with Megan Zinn. With her and us today, very special guest, Pat Dobie. Megan.
Yes, we're speaking with developmental editor Pat Dobie. So you really, you know, it's clear from our conversation, you really need to keep up with what's going on in the industry. It's not just that you need to understand how a book is structured, and the writing process, but what the industry wants, what they're looking for, what is selling to publishers, and what publishers are managing to sell. How do you keep up on all of that?
Well, you know, just to clarify, the first 5 years I was running an editing business, I did not know about that I should be keeping up on publishing. I was just saying, okay, my expertise is the book itself. I'd come out of an MFA program. I learned a lot. I'd written 5 terrible novels by that point. So I was just really concerned with whether the book worked as a book. And then I understood that, in fact, the clients that I have who are looking to get traditionally published, they need more. So I do a few things. I subscribe to newsletters from on the publishing industry, Publishing Weekly. There's Jane Friedman's newsletter. She's very up on stuff. And I'm a compulsive reader outside of work. I never don't have about 30 books lying around. I'm a library goer because I don't have storage anymore for more books. And so I just kind of read a lot. I read a lot. I have opinions. I look stuff up. When I get a manuscript in, if it's a type of book I haven't worked on before because I'm a generalist, I read a bunch of books like it or while I'm
Oh,
working on that manuscript.
wow, that's impressive. Do you have a sense of what, I mean, this is a broad question, but what, and in terms of the major publishers, in terms of the Big Five and all of their imprints, what they're looking for, what they're taking? I mean, I hear things, as you said, no World War II unless it's really unusual. I'm a romance reader, and the conversation in romance right now is that nobody wants to publish historical romance, which breaks my heart. What are you? What do you? What is your sense of what publishers are looking for these days?
Well, just 32 million romances, I think, were published last year in
Yeah, that's about
print.
right.
So you'll still get your fix. But
Yeah.
the publishers are looking for something that they don't know what they're looking for. They want something, really, that's my opinion. They'll know it when they see it, but they can't describe it. They want more of what sells, but different enough that it's not going to not sell. So it's so subjective reading, and publishers want stuff that fits their imprint. And that is, they might have, oh, it's not, I had one book turned down because it was too masculine for the readership at New American Library. This is a book that I wrote, an adventure. And I was like, okay, what do you do? Even my agent didn't know that part. So it's just, it's a very subjective, weird industry where it feels like they're throwing spaghetti at the wall. Most writers make maybe $6,000 a year if they're lucky. This is professional writers. And then there's the outliers, Stephen King's and so on, that make millions and millions. And so the publishers are trying to get more of the breakthrough books, the breakthrough authors, the outliers. But to do that, they need to try a bunch of people and then decide who's going to get the money for promo.
Yeah, and it seems like very often the huge breakthroughs are surprises, are things like I think these books that like are insane, like right now,
Harry Potter
Harry
was
Potter.
turned down by
Yeah.
30 publishers.
And currently the fourth book in the, oh, I can't remember, that it's the Romantasy series that I've completely blanked on, but that
Oh,
was the
Thorn,
fastest.
Sarah Moss?
No, the other writer.
Oh.
Yeah, Sarah Moss. Onyx is the most recent one. It was the fastest selling book in 20 years. The newest book. It's great. And I don't think, well, they may have seen that coming because it was her fourth book, but I don't think they saw the popularity of that, for instance.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
crazy. Bill.
I'm wondering if it's the agent that is crucial to this process after all, because it's the agent that's got to really sell it to the publisher. And if you could spend another half a minute on that, I'd appreciate it.
Sure.
Yeah.
The agent is crucial in that they're the ones in touch with the talent, the writer. They need to also excite the people called acquisitions editors at publishing houses, because acquisitions editors will get pitched by agents that they know, who know what they like, and then they will take it to the board, the editorial board, and they have to fight for their title to get published. They can only publish so many. So it's a, the agent is the first step, but then there's more after that.
Yeah, and I think the agents become they build these relationships with the publishers, so they know what the publishers want. I think the publishers very often trust them. So it really is the agent is truly an agent and truly your middle person to help you get to a publisher.
We have less than a minute left, but do you ever go and say to a client, this is good, but it's not good enough to get an agent, or you failed to get an agent, you should self-publish?
Yeah. I don't ever say you should. I say consider self-publishing. This is not, this will not meet the standards of traditional publishing. Yeah, I have to be pretty blunt sometimes, but I don't want to waste their money.
Yeah. And in the last, we've left a little 20 seconds. What do you love about this work? What keeps you going with it?
Reading. I mean, I think I came out of the womb reading. I don't know, but I just love reading. It's my happy place.
That's fantastic. I'm talking with Pat Dobie, who is a professional reader, which is what many of us really want to be. But she's a developmental editor, which lets her read for a living. Thank you so much, Pat, for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's really fun.
And thank you, Megan
Thank you.
Zinn.